And welcome to For the Love of Dog with Janice Wolf. Today we're going to be talking about how to get a better relationship with your dog by giving him clarity. Well, clarity is an important concept for dogs because just like with children, you can't punish them or get angry at them for not ever teaching them what you expected in the first place. So one of the things we're going to go through today is actually how to get that relationship with your dog and how to get that clarity so that the dog understands what it is you want of him. Just imagine if you went into a foreign land, let's say you were in Russia or you were in Japan or you were in a tiny little area where no one spoke English. And all of a sudden, after weeks and weeks of not understanding anything that anyone was saying, you heard another person speaking English. You would run to that person. That person could be an axe murderer. You would run to that person because at least you understood what that person was saying. So imagine for a minute that your dog has been going on for years and years, potentially, not understanding, but trying to figure out and interpret what your language is, even though it's not his language or her language. Well, this is how you're going to start learning how to think like a dog and how to understand what I call Doganese. Okay, we have Japanese, we have Chinese, well now we have Doganese. Doganese is the language of dogs. It's animal psychology, it's dog behavior. So in my book, Shh Happens, S-H-H-H Happens, Dog Behavior 101, I go through in detail the way in which we can start to communicate with our dogs and start letting them understand what it is that we even want of them. So imagine if you're in that foreign country and you break a law. You didn't know it was a law. You didn't know you broke the law because you didn't know what the law was. Well, we do that with our dogs. Well, I don't, but a lot of people do. And my patients are the dogs and the horses I work with, and the clients are the humans who own them and care for them. So just imagine for a moment if the animal doesn't understand what the rules are and what you expect. Well, what happens is because you are not clear, you're not giving him clarity, the dog never understood that there was something that you wanted him to do. So what winds up happening is the dog does something you don't want. You get angry at him. You yell at him, scream at him, punish him, put him in his crate, whatever it is. And the dog doesn't understand what he did wrong because you never taught him what you didn't want him to do and what you did want him to do. Now, this is completely separate from obedience or other training, because obedience is fun. You know, it's a great way to have fun, teach your dog tricks, you know, train him to do things, changing a body position. Behavior, which is what I'm teaching you and what I'm all about, is canine behavior and cognitive canine behavior. Cognitive behavior because dogs are thinking creatures. Animals don't just, you know, randomly act out. Now, do some of them? Yeah, but there's usually a reason. So imagine for a moment that you just don't understand why your dog is doing something. So now if the dog doesn't understand what it's doing wrong in your eyes, and it keeps repeating that same exact behavior, and you keep rewarding it with cookies or, you know, giving it, you know, using a clicker, or the horrible people who are using aversives like shock collars and prong collars and yanking on the dogs and yelling at them and squirting them in the face and scaring them with penny cans and shakers and, you know, giving them toxic chemicals that you're throwing at them, throwing bicycle chains as one company does that comes from outside this country and needs to stay outside this country. You're scaring dogs, and particularly when you're dealing with, like I do, dogs with fear issues or dogs who are uncertain, which a lot of dogs are because we're not clear with them. We don't give them clarity. So they really don't understand what it was that we even wanted of them. And then we get mad at them for doing something we never taught them not to do. Instead of making your dog sit by the front door because you don't want him to run out the front door, how about just teach him not to run out the front door? Instead of yelling at the dog and kicking him and knocking him off with your knee and potentially hurting him or squirting him in the face or yanking on him and yelling because he's jumping on people, don't make him sit or lie down or throw him in his crate. teach him that you didn't want him to jump. Better yet, teach him that he doesn't need to do those behaviors because you're already taking care of him. So imagine for a moment, you're in that foreign country and someone says, hey, here's a list. Here's guidelines. These are the things you can do and these are the things you can't do. Well, then if you break those rules, now all of a sudden someone can say there's a consequence, right? Because you've taught them that what you do and don't expect them to do. So as soon as they understand what it is, dogs are great. They're not like kids. Dogs typically want to behave. They want to do the right thing. That's why we love dogs, because dogs are pure and they know that, you know, they want to do good things for us, but they know what they would do with other dogs, but they don't understand what they would do with humans. So when you have a dog who's, let's say, aggressive, and I had two clients just today call me up and said one has a basset hound and one has a few chihuahua mixes and a Wheaton Terrier. I'm going to go there this weekend for both of the families. But the dogs just don't understand what their role is. So assume that unlike you or your spouse or your friends or your kids who might have an ulterior motive to get something from you or to do something like that, assume instead that dogs are pure. Dogs are trying to do things the way we want them to, but they just don't know because we didn't teach them to do that. So let's go through things. Purpose of the dog. What is your purpose? Because these are very important concepts. So if you have a purpose, let's say you're married, or let's say you're a parent, or you're a good friend, or you're an older sibling, your job is to help and to provide, to give and to help that younger or potentially weaker person or animal who's in, you are entrusted with their care, all right? Now, so let's say for a minute, what would we call that? Well, in my book, we go through it. It's called purpose. And what is the purpose of an animal, whether it's a dog or it's a bird or it's a cow or it's whatever animal, whoever it is who's in charge, who the one who's supposed to be doing the job to keep the species going and to keep the family safe and secure. That one, let's not go into the dominance route because I don't go into that. But let's go into what is it really? You have a boss, you have a parent, you have someone who's a caretaker. You don't need to be dominant to them. You don't want to be dominant. You don't want to be assertive and yelling and being bossy. What you want to do is be a really kind boss. Yes, you can be the boss. You have to be, in a way, with your kids, right? Or with a family member who's younger or weaker. So it's not that you're not above that person, but you want to be very kind about it. You don't want to just randomly act out and say, you know, yell at your dog, yell at your kids. Because what we're trying to do is to teach our kids, to teach them and to teach the dogs, to teach the horse, to teach the animal that we are taking care of him. And if we're taking care of him, then he doesn't need to worry about anything else because we've got his back. So what do you do when a dog doesn't seem to understand that because maybe the humans haven't taught him what to do or what not to do? Well, what happens is you need to teach the dog that your purpose is to provide for his needs or her needs and to protect. So let's go through that a little bit. If you're going to be providing for someone, what are different ways in which you would provide for them? You might buy them food, right? You might get them a good place to live. You might give them clothing. You might give them water. You would basically provide the essentials that someone would need in order to do the job that they need to do. But you're above, you're in charge of that special person because you're above them, because that's why you are above them. You're allowed to be above them, and you should be, because you are the one who's taking care of them. So let's say for a moment, taking care of a young child. The child is a human being, obviously, and is entitled to certain rights and privileges, but fewer rights and privileges because he or she is not 18 or 21 years of age yet. So if you say, hey, bedtime is at, 7:30, and the child is 6 years old and says, I want to stay up till midnight. Well, I'm sorry, honey, you're young and you're growing and you need to be in bed by 7:30. So even though the child might not like it, that's the rule. So we teach our children what to do, and then they understand, and then they hopefully comply. Now, if they know what the rules are, and they know that we're providing for them, we're giving them everything, then that is why we have that potential and why we have that ability to teach them and to say, yes, this is the way it is. Not that I'm mad at you, not that I'm being bossy, but I know better for you because I'm in charge of you. And that's a huge responsibility. So think about it for a minute and think like a dog. If your dog is looking at you as being the provider, the one who's taking care of him, then your dog is going to look at you as being respected and as being someone who should be followed and should be listened to, because it all goes together. If, on the other hand, like all of my clients start out, the dog thinks that he's the one who's taking care of you, that's where you get into problems, where the dog is urinating in the house or defecating in the house or overly stressed, or the dog is reactive with other animals or with people, or it's not eating, or it'll only eat when you hand feed it, or it's not good on a leash, or it's, protective over your house or protective over a person. I've seen, oh my gosh, so many thousands of people through the years who couldn't hug. There was actually a young couple in their late 20s. They'd been married for 6 years and they hadn't had children yet. And we joked about it. And I said, so, I'm sure everyone's asking you when you're going to have kids. And they said, well, I'm going to be 30 years old this year. And my husband and I cannot hug each other or be intimate because our dog, if we lock him outside the bedroom door, the dog is scratching on the door, destroying the door, and it's ruining the mood. And if we leave the dog in the room, the dog jumps up on the bed and bites my husband in the behind. And so we can't even hug. We can't ever think of having children unless we go away on vacation. But we can't go on vacation because our dog is so bad with everyone else that the dog would bite whoever we would have in the house to be a caretaker. He can't go. He's already been kicked out of doggy daycare. He's been kicked out of boarding. And I hear these stories. And it's funny, but it's really not, because what starts to happen is people start living their lives around their dog's behavior instead of living your life and having the dog fit into your life, which is what it should be. God knows I've got quite a few dogs, and I just take two dogs and I call their names and they come up and they wait for me, and I let them come into the car. They go into the car, they wait for me, and I can take whichever dogs I want and go anywhere I want. And it's fun, and they are a part of my life and I live for them, but I don't live around them. I don't live around their behavior. I can have anybody come into my house. Yet, if somebody came into my house and tried to hurt me, I have no doubt that my dogs would be protecting me. But that doesn't happen. So sometimes people say, well, I want my dog to bark. I want my dog to let me know if there's somebody, outside. And yes, the dog should alert. But part of the providing for and the giving things is that I'm also entrusted with taking care of the person and the dog and the house and all the things that I may own, because I'm the provider. So if I'm providing it, then it was mine to begin with. So if you take a dog who perhaps is a little protective over your home or protective over a child, and you say, well, it's fine, he's great with the family members. Well, the problem is when you have kids come over, and now that other child comes over, and if you have boys and they may be wrestling, the dog may wind up biting someone. If you have somebody come in who's like a stranger, the dog may come up and nip at the stranger. Why is that? Because in those situations, the dog thinks that he's in charge. So let's see how we can change that. And I bet we can do it very quickly. First thing is, how would dogs find food? How would dogs, like the lead dog, the guardian dog, the horse, the wolf, the animal who is in charge of the family. So the, let's say the head of household in any kind of animal. This is basic animal behavior, again, cognitive behavior, thinking. Dogs are thinking beings. They're not, you can use operant conditioning all you want. You can take a dog and you can give it a cookie every time it sits. And it's going to learn the word sit means put my rear end down to the ground. It doesn't mean that the dog is going to do it when you don't have the treat, because you're using that conditioning and promising him a bribe, basically, if he does that. Well, if you take away the bribe, you take away the treat. Now the dog says, well, what's in it for me? So think about it. Think like a dog. In nature, how would dogs get food? Well, wouldn't they go out hunting? So, right. So dogs would go out for a hunt and they would, let's say, find something that was already killed. They might have to hunt together. They might have to go together to be able to work on that, because maybe they're going to take down a big wildebeest in the middle of the New York City area. And they need to work together. So for dogs to be dog aggressive, it's not really normal in nature. The pack, like when they live together, it's a family. So that's why even when we see in the news that a family member, like a mother killed her children, or a father killed his children, or a sibling, you know, hurt his other sibling or grandparent, we look at it and we say, wow, there's something so wrong with that. Because in nature, the family unit exists. You know, dogs do live in a pack. If you bring family members and you bring a new one in, or if you bring someone who was from the outside, they will either fight for the top of the leadership pack, or they may decide to, you know, stay at the bottom. The key is that they're respecting that there's a natural order, a natural hierarchy. So, for instance, in my house, I have several dogs I babysit for, and quite a few dogs, but only one or two at a time. So I bring them in, and my dogs know they have an order and ranking that I've set up for them. And I put, all my dogs are super stable and wonderful, but I put my oldest ones on top, and then followed by the younger ones. And then they go by, basically when we get to the fourth or fifth down, they know, they're just like, hey, we're chill. But they're not allowed to fight. They're not allowed to be dominant to each other, because I'm in charge. And if I'm in charge, then they're not in charge. So think about it. Either you own your company or you don't. Do you own your company? Well, if you do own your company, then you can set the rules and the guidelines and the boundaries. You can tell them when they have to come in, when they leave. If you don't own your company, someone else tells you where you're going to work, what time you come in, what time you can leave, and also dictates how much money you're going to make, right? So if you have multiple dogs, don't feel bad if you give one cookie and one three cookies. You know, you have different people in a company. The CEO of a large Fortune, you know, 100 company is making, you know, hundreds, potentially hundreds of millions of dollars, or certainly many millions of dollars a year. And the employee who is at the bottom, you know, who may be like a low entry level clerical or trainee, they don't make millions of dollars. Does the trainee get mad that the CEO is making a lot of money? No, the CEO is in charge of the company. He's the leader of the company. So if you give your dog one treat and your other dog four treats, because one has a weight issue and the others don't, then that's what you decide you're going to do. It's okay. It's fair. Stop thinking like a human. The problem is we think like humans and we expect the dogs to act like humans. They don't think like we do. Like I always joke, men and women are almost the same species and we don't understand each other. So how do you expect a completely different species to understand what we want them to do when you've never taught them what you want them to do? So how can we teach a dog that we're providing for his needs? How can we really get into their psyche cognitively? How can we get them to think that, hey, we're in charge, you're not, Therefore, I will provide for you. I will give you what you need. And for that, all I expect is for you to respect me and the other members of the family. So think about that for a moment. One of the best ways we can actually do this is to take our dogs for a walk. Now, people say, well, I walk my dog all the time. Like, I take my dog for a walk 3 or 4 times a week, or I take my dog hiking on Saturdays. But that's great. But dogs don't only eat on Saturdays. They don't always only eat 3 days a week. What we want to do is start teaching your dog in a way the dog is going to naturally understand. And how is he going to naturally understand? By taking him out for a hunt walk. So I call it hunt, wait, eat. So we're actually taking our dog out on a leash beside us or behind us. And I'll go into this another week of how to get the dog properly walking next to you. But the reason we don't want the dog ahead of you is then he becomes in charge. Think of Canadian geese. You have the Canadian geese that fly in a V, an inverted V. What happens if that first lead goose who's leading everyone falls out of the sky? Well, somebody else takes over, right? So the same way that that happens, we want to make sure that we don't fall out of the sky. We have to be that lead goose. And it's nature. It's not just dogs. It's any species. Any species that is working together, community, like wolves and wild dogs and wild horses and almost any, like antelope, all of the animals work together. Somebody has to be in charge. And it's not that somebody's being cruel and mean and rough and tough. It's that somebody makes the decisions, because otherwise they're going to die. The entire species would perish from the earth if we didn't have somebody in charge. And the reason it has to be the strongest, because the strongest one is the one who's going to lead us out again to provide for food and for the needs of the family again next time. Well, let's think about it for a moment. When you are married, you're with a significant other, you're a parent, you're taking care of an elderly, grandparent or whatever. Think about it for a minute. Don't you have to take care of them? Don't you have to go out and earn money? Well, why do you go and work? Why do people go out and have jobs? Do people just go out and work because they feel like it? Or wouldn't they rather stay home with their families? Wouldn't they rather have time for a hobby? I think so. But the problem is they have to eat. And in order to eat in our world, in our human world, we have to be able to earn money. And even as far as how dogs find food, how they go out hunting to look for food, we do the same thing. Think about it for a minute. Don't parents or don't guardians have to go out and, earn money, right? Well, now you earn money. You can't eat the money. You get the money. What do you do with the money? You go again and you go hunting for food. But you're going hunting for food in a different way. You're going hunting for food that's actually in a supermarket. Now, some people do go hunting actually with a gun and they kill their own food. And that's another whole story, but that's fine because they're providing for their families. So think for a moment that we're going out, we're hunting, we're finding food, and the dog has to come with us. Why does the dog have to come with us? Why can't we just leave his food down all the time? Because if you leave the food down all the time, then all that time that bowl of food is sitting on the floor, whether it's 5 extra minutes or it's a day, the food being there is showing the dog that he's actually in charge. He's the one doing his own providing, which is also a problem with a lot of these different toys and games that have food in them, and you leave your dog with that during the day and the dog plays with it and knocks them around, and then all of a sudden he gets food out of it. If you have a dog with a behavioral issue, you definitely don't want to do that, because it gives him the mistaken impression that he's doing that providing. He's actually the one going out and finding his own food. It's also the reason that sometimes dogs will go out and kill little animals in the yard. Those of you who have a backyard and are suburbia, like I do, my dogs don't chase the animals, the wild animals. They don't chase the chipmunks or the squirrels or whatever, because they don't need to, because they know that I'm taking care of them. So they're very cooperative. They're very gentle with other animals. They don't try to kill something they see on the street. They're not pulling and tugging at another dog. They're not pulling and tugging at a chipmunk or a bird that they see, or a goose or a duck. They know that I'm taking care of them and I'm providing them with food. Along the lines with providing for your dog, think about this. When you give them a squeaky toy, not like a rubber ball, but like an actual squeaky toy, especially those who are fur covered, why do dogs do that? Well, what does that little squeaky going on, what does that mimic? You know what it mimics? A dying animal. So if your dog is taking, let's say, a hedgehog, everybody has those cute little hedgehogs with the squeaker in it. So let's say your dog is getting used to playing with his hedgehog and he's squeaking it and he squeaks it and squeaks it and squeaks it. And now the squeaker dies because, as they always do, the squeaker is no longer squeaking. What does that mean? The dog has killed the animal. So what's the next step that a dog would do? He would, instead of taking the squeaker out, right? He takes that out. That represents the vocal cords, the heart and everything else. Now there's nothing making noise. So now he starts pulling out the innards, as they say, and he's now taking the guts out from the animal. But it's stuffed with fuzz. It's stuffed with like foam or whatever is inside there, right? So now, instead of the dog getting the meat or the guts of the animal that it was trying to kill and disembowel, it puts fluff all over your house. What did we do? Well, not I, but what do most people do? Buy a new squeaker, put it back in, restuff it, and sew it so he can do the same thing again. What we're doing is we're teaching our dogs to hunt, and we're teaching them to kill things and disembowel things. So now they go outside and they bring you that mouse, they bring you the chipmunk, they catch a bird out of midair, they get aggressive to other animals. They might even get aggressive to other dogs. They chase cats. They chase whatever's there, because we're teaching them, because we're not providing for them in that respect. So what we're going to start doing is taking the dog out and having that dog go out with us. Canadian geese, right? We are the lead goose. We have to be the one who goes out first. And it starts with, we'll get to that another week, walking through the door first, not getting your dog really amped up before you walk out the door. If you start out and like, oh, where's the leash? Come on, buddy, let's go. You get them all hyped up. That's like having your child and you say, oh, we're going to go to Disneyland and here's some sugar and candy and popcorn and, you know, Gatorade and all kinds of sugary things. And, oh, we're going, get in the car, kids, get in the car. And then they're all amped up and screaming, and you yell at them to shut up and calm down. Well, don't tell them to shut up and calm down. You just got them that way. So don't do that with your dog and get them all amped up before you start your walk. Of course they're going to be pulling you and trying to get out ahead if you've already amped them up, because now that's how they're walking out the front door, and they're probably dragging you out the front door first anyway. So let's think about it. Let's try to figure how we can make this not happen. We're going to start what I call hunt, wait, eat. Hunt, wait, eat means that we're going to be the first ones out. We're going to take care of the dog and we're going to go out there first. So we go out first. So why does that matter that we're leading? Well, whoever's in charge, whoever's in front from a safety standpoint is going to be out there first. But more importantly, why do dogs want to get out ahead? They want to put their heads down, their noses down. They want to be able to smell what's there, who's been walking before them, what's down the street. And whoever's first is getting the clear scent, the clean scent that hasn't been stirred up by the rest of the pack. So if the dog is walking first and he's out ahead on a flexi lead, which is letting him go out 20 or 30 feet ahead, he's not only now the leader, he's the scout. He's the one going and checking it out to see if, in fact, it's going to be safe for the rest of the group. So you see how we're confusing our dogs? Just we start out every day where, oh, well, I want to let him smell, and he likes to pee on every tree. Don't let him go to the bathroom on every tree. Don't let him stop constantly and mark territory. Because what you're teaching him very clearly, because dogs are very physical beings, they see, they watch what we're doing physically. They watch where our bodies are. They watch where we move, how we move, where we go. So they watch that, and then they react accordingly based on what we do. So if the dog is constantly out ahead, it gets that undestroyed natural scent, right? It's also out in an area. It's blocking. It's getting between us and danger because it's out ahead, and it's very clearly leading us. Well, no wonder dogs don't understand what we're trying to teach them. We don't know what we're trying to teach them. I know what we should be teaching them, and we need to start teaching them the principles of we're in charge. Our purpose is to provide, and our second purpose is to protect. We're going to go into that next week. So we're going to take a break for a couple of moments, and then we'll come back with our second segment, which is from shelter dog to service dog. And we'll be talking about service dogs and their very special bond with their humans and how you can train your own dog potentially to be a service dog. We'll be right back. And welcome to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Well, today we're going to be talking about that special relationship between service dogs and their owners. And we're going to also clear up a little bit about the differences, because a service dog is very different from a therapy dog, which is completely different from an emotional support dog or a companion dog. And people really don't understand the differences, and I think that's so important. First of all, a service dog does not become a service dog because you feel better when you pet it. A service dog is the highest level that you can possibly achieve, and it takes months and months. And for Merlin's Kids, which is our organization that trains service dogs, we take shelter dogs and train them into service dogs. And this is Merlin's Kids. You can see right here. So Merlin's Kids trains using the principles of natural canine behavior rehabilitation. Our sister company, which is called United Canine Professionals, and you can reach out to us on the web at UnitedK9pros.com. Merlin's Kids is Merlin's Kids, MerlinsKids.org, because it's a nonprofit. We take about a year and a half to 2 years to train a dog to become a service dog. You can imagine going for some basic obedience that you might complete in 8 weeks, maybe an hour or 45 minutes a week, is nothing compared to a year and a half to 2 years of 20 to 30 hours a week constantly, plus 3 to 6 more months of public access exposure training. So when we say a service dog, we mean a dog who is required to mitigate a disability and performs tasks to mitigate that disability. A service dog is a dog who should be, and I won't say is, trained, because we train ours perfectly, but probably 90% of the dogs you see out there with the service dog vest are fakes. And we're working very assiduously right now with different government organizations and individuals, senators and people even higher up in the government, to have standardized training and standardized testing. So it doesn't matter as much how you're training the dog, as long as you're not using aversives like shock collars and prong collars and yanking and yelling and throwing things. As long as you're doing it, whether you can do it with obedience to do some basic service dog skills, or you're using natural canine behavior rehabilitation, the cognitive training that we use at Merlin's Kids, either way, if the dog is able to perform the task, then the dog is able to perform the task. And that's what we care about. But the problem is, you can't go to your local obedience trainer who thinks he knows how to train a dog using cookies, and he trains a dog to sit and lie down and says, oh, good, I trained your dog to be a service dog. A service dog not only has to be absolutely impeccable, perfect in public, because he's going to be around people, maybe on an airplane, maybe in a restaurant, maybe in a public location. And we have to assume that any dog that's going to be in a public location should be there with permission and with training. So the problem I see most often is that people think that while they're training, they're self-training, which is totally fine, they're self-training a dog, they think that once the dog can go out and be around people, that somehow it's a service dog. And it's not. Being around people is a part of it. The dog has to be around animals. The dog has to be around children. The most common problem that I see with dogs, even who are legitimately trained, task-trained dogs, service dogs, is that they're not trained with other animals. So the dog, you go into an airport and you assume there won't be another animal there. Well, a lot of times there is another animal, and now we'll wind up having, like Savannah several months ago was attacked in an airport by a fake service dog, some kind of a poodle, like a doodle thing that was there. And it literally lunged at her and bit her and was holding on to her. But fortunately, it was at the end of the winter, so I had her heavy winter coat on, so the dog grabbed the coat instead of her. But otherwise, she would have gotten ripped up. She didn't even bat an eye. I didn't even realize what happened until I turned and I looked down and I said, oh my gosh, what's going on? And the woman's like, oh, my dog doesn't like other dogs. Like, well, why is your dog in the airport then? She said, well, it's my service dog. And I said, no, it's not. It's not under the ADA. What gives the dog the ability to be in public or to be in locations that it's normally not allowed due to Board of Health or other regulations is the fact that the dog is mitigating or reducing, helping, if you would, prevent other issues in that person who has the disability. So the same way that you might go and you'd need a cane or you would need a wheelchair or you'd need a blood pressure or a blood sugar monitor or you would need another device, dogs are actually considered to be assistive devices. So the Americans with Disabilities Act in 1990, which was revised in 2011, actually started out to protect people, not the animal. So when you go in and you have a service dog, the dog is not protected by the ADA. You are protected by the Americans with Disabilities Act. So if you have, let's say, a disability, you're blind or you're visually impaired, it's pretty obvious that you have a dog and it has the harness and the dog is guiding you. If someone is in a wheelchair, it's also, if the dog doesn't do anything, even though you're in a wheelchair and you're disabled, if the dog is not performing a task for you to mitigate your disability, for instance, it's pulling you or it's retrieving dropped items or it's opening a door for you or other tasks, the dog is not a service dog. So having a disability doesn't mean that your dog becomes a service dog. Having the disability and having the dog being able to mitigate or reduce the severity of the symptoms or help you despite your disability, now the dog is helping you as if it were like a person or somebody else, like a cane or a crutch or something. So the dog, it doesn't have to be a physical disability that the dog is mitigating, but there has to be a task training, and the dog can not only be task trained, it must be also public access trained. So if, let's say you have a dog who alerts to blood sugar lows, Okay. Well, yes, then that would be a disability if you're diabetic or hypoglycemic and you need that dog to mitigate your disability, totally fine. But if you just feel good when you have the dog and you pet the dog, that dog is not covered because it's not mitigating the disability. So there are different parts of this. So we want to first think, okay, is the dog going to be able to complete public access exposure? Now, what does that mean? Okay. Once we at Merlin's Kids certify a dog, and there is no national certification yet, we are working on it. We are very, very close. So once Merlin's Kids provides a service dog and says, yes, this dog is certified through our organization as a reputable organization will certify each of its dogs, you do not need, nor should you ever show any kind of identification for a service dog, although we are working to get an ID tag or something that if it's then counterfeited, the creator of the counterfeit would actually go to prison because it would be a federal offense, the same as if you were counterfeiting money. We're trying to make it easier for people who actually need a service dog to be able to get the dog and to not be asked those questions, which the ADA allows, which are, is this a service dog required because of a disability? And you can say yes, but if you're lying that you say yes, people can't ask you anything other than what tasks is the dog trained to perform? Well, to me, if someone has seizures and doesn't really want to tell everybody the medical issues, you can't say, hey, why do you need the dog? Because that would be a violation of ADA. But to ask someone, well, what tasks is the dog trained to perform? Obviously, you'd say, well, the dog is trained to alert to seizures. Now you just had to give your medical information out to someone. And it's nobody's business. So what happens is the people who have a service dog, a legitimate service dog that was either privately trained properly and actually does the tasks, or it was trained by a reputable agency, which there are very few. We are going to work on that as well so people can know which are the more reputable agencies. But the goal is that I don't think that's right for people to even ask about your disability, because in those questions, you could say, is this a service dog required because of a disability? Yes. That's the only question there should be. But because so many people are starting to fake it, now the people who need the service dogs are actually being required to ask or answer, I should say. They're being required to answer these very prying, probing questions. So what happens if you're in a restaurant and you have your service dog who's, let's say, a Merlin's Kid service dog, and this dog is lying down, it's perfect, it's alerting as needed, but it's otherwise completely, you don't even know the dog is there, and that's what it should be. So what do we do in that case when somebody comes in with an ill-behaved mutt who comes in and is growling and barking and trying to attack your dog? And the person says, oh, it's a service dog, he's allowed in here. Well, guess what? If the dog is claimed to be a service dog and it is ill-behaved, the restaurant or the business establishment can tell the person to leave. Now, the person can come back in afterwards because the person is allowed. The person can call someone and say, hey, the dog is, you know, obviously not trained or it's out of control. And the person can come back in without the dog. But you can't go in and expect wherever you go to take your fake service dog in and assume there's not going to be another animal, because very often there is another animal there. And if your dog is out of control, the restaurant or the business can absolutely remove your dog from the premises. Again, they can't throw you out. You can make arrangements to have the dog outside with somebody, not in a hot car, please be very careful with that. But if your dog is not a true service dog, please don't ruin it for those of us who need a service dog. It's very frustrating because we feel bad. Listen, I have, you know, Wyatt's List, Wyatts List, Wyattslist.com, which I'm going to talk about at the end of the show. Wyatt's List, our goal there is to be able to get people who have well-behaved dogs to go anywhere and everywhere. I'm actually buying a huge new facility not too far from my home where people are going to be able to come. It's going to be like a cafe for dogs. And if your dog is well-behaved, service dog or therapy dog or companion dog or emotional support, whatever, you'll be able to come. But you'll be able to come even with your well-behaved pet. And if your pet is not well-behaved, I'm a behaviorist. I have an amazing team of behaviorists all over the country and all over the world, actually, including Bulgaria and Australia and Japan. We can help you. But don't bring your dog in because you think you're scamming someone, because who you're really, really hurting isn't you. It's you're hurting others who are going to be, unfortunately, feeling the wrath and having to be questioned. So, for instance, right now I'm in New York City, and you can hear down the hallway there is someone who has, a few dogs barking. Now, my dog is right here next to me. She's not barking. She's sleeping. She's right here next to me. Because it doesn't matter what those dogs do. Mine is a service dog. So if we have the ability to have, and we have someone just opened the door. If we have the ability to have a dog who is very well behaved, then that's great. And we can help you with that. As a matter of fact, you can call 855-4-9-PROS, which is 855-449-9288, if your dog is not well behaved. And what we'll be able to do is help you to make your dog well behaved. Wyatt's List, the goal for Wyatt's List is also to be able to have locations, because there are a lot of places who are dog friendly. And our goal is for you without the service dogs or without the well-behaved dogs. And your dog's just a knucklehead, silly, you know, dog, but well-behaved in general and isn't aggressive, to be able to go out and have fun, because that's why we all have dogs, right? The emotional support concept to me is so silly, because emotional support, yes, everybody who gets a pet, unless it's for junkyard dog guarding, or if it's some sick person who's going to be trying to dog fight, but all normal people who would have a dog, that's why we get a dog, for the emotional support, for the love we get, for the unconditional support and love. And it just feels great to be around dogs. So emotional support, and we're going to get to that now. Emotional support dogs, if you have a psychiatric issue, because people always get upset because they don't understand the truth of this. A service dog is not only a physical thing. If you have severe PTSD that cripples you, if you have severe anxiety that cripples you, if you have emotional issues, behavioral issues, like kids with autism, which we do a lot of autism service dogs, those are legitimate service dog trainable tasks that we can then have your dog train a dog for you. And your dog will then be a legitimate service dog because it is mitigating a disability. Not all disabilities are physical. Emotional disabilities like anxiety, bipolar, ADHD, all these things, these are different conditions that are absolutely legitimate service dog conditions. These are diagnoses that can be helped with a trained service dog. Emotional support dogs are, in our estimation, people who don't need a service dog. They might feel better to have a dog with them, but they could also, you know, maybe have a stuffed animal, because not everyone is a good candidate to have a dog. And, you know, dogs are a lot of work. Even the best behaved dog in the world, like I have right here, even the best behaved dog in the world, it still needs to go out for walks. It still needs to eat. It still might get sick, might hurt itself. They cost money. You know, it's a lot of work. So emotional support, we had somebody who, very sweet little girl, Jenny, who I love more than anything in the world, who had heard about someone trying to have, I guess it was when the emotional support peacock ridiculous stupidity came out, which is unbelievable, or the emotional support alligator that they have to close its mouth with duct tape because it's still an alligator and would bite someone. These are crazy. These are mocking something that really should be good. She actually sent me these adorable little things, emotional support, an emotional support goldfish. So an emotional support fish, and then also the cracker, the little goldfish crackers, with an emotional support vest on it. And emotional support Ben and Jerry's, which to most women, especially at that time of the month, emotional support Ben and Jerry's is a legitimate thing. So emotional support, if it's just that you're trying to bring your dog into places or have a dog in a building that's not dog friendly, which again, I want to change buildings to be dog friendly so people don't have to lie about it. Again, probably 90% of those people trying to get those fake letters that you see all the time on social media, you know, make your dog an emotional support dog. We have psychiatrists and counselors who will give you for $20 a letter stating that you need this emotional support dog. Come on, people. Seriously, that's ridiculous. You're scammers. Let's get everybody, instead of being scammers, let's get more buildings to accept dogs. Let's get your dogs to be better trained and better behaved so that they're not going to be a problem. But you see, the problem is, instead of getting training and instead of getting behavioral help, like from me and my team at United Canine Pros, you're scamming. You're saying, oh, well, I'm going to keep the dog no matter what. I don't care. Most landlords, if you just have a well-behaved dog and you spoke with them, we can get buildings, especially when there's a board, get buildings to allow well-behaved dogs. But just because, like a service dog, if a service dog bites someone, you're still legally liable. It's still your dog. So get the training for your dog. Don't scam people. I want everybody who loves their dogs to be able to go everywhere and anywhere with their dogs. But I don't want your dog jumping on and attacking my service dog, because my service dog has an important job to keep me alive and to keep me safe, keep me healthy. If you want to bring your dog, then getting a fake letter, an ID, and then yelling about it, and this is the big thing, people go, oh, well, you're discriminating against me because I have an emotional support dog. It's my service dog. Oh, no, they're completely different. So instead of having a fake emotional support dog, if you have a disability, a psychiatric disability, you're undercutting and shortchanging yourself, because you don't have to have a fake emotional support dog. You can actually come. We have training classes for all of our people. We 855-449-9288, or you can email us at unitedk9pros@gmail.com. We have an entire program for that. So we have classes all over the country. You can take the online training classes, which are about 16 weeks, and then you'll need to have quite a bit of hands-on training, about 125 hours for the second level, 40 hours for the first. And what we do is we rehabilitate any behavioral issues, and we will help you to train your dog. So if it's just an emotional support dog and it's you legitimately want to have a well-behaved dog that can go with you and can be in the hotel, can be in an apartment or wherever, even though technically hotels are not a place where an emotional support dog can go. But if your dog is well-behaved, most of these places don't mind. The key is your dog has to be well-behaved. Take the responsibility for it. Stop trying to scam people and threaten people. You're not letting me in with my service dog. He's my emotional support dog. Well, is he emotional support dog or is he a service dog? They're not the same. So we're trying, and I am trying so hard to help people. Take our online course, and then you'll need the hands-on hours with one of our behaviorists. But we do this every Sunday, and we have at our new facility and our other facilities around the country. The service dog and emotional support dog and therapy dog classes, they're all three different. I'm going to go through a little bit more. Emotional support dog is a dog that just makes you feel better. You're just the very presence. Like I said, I mean, most people, dogs are your emotional support animal because they do make us feel better and they love us unconditionally. But if they're not task trained, the next level of that is going to be coming in and having, like, beyond that would be another type of training, which is a therapy dog. Now, what's the difference between a therapy dog, service dog, emotional support dog? completely different. A therapy dog is a well-behaved dog who will sit, lie down, chill out, and goes to hospitals, nursing homes, maybe a library to read with kids. It's not certified by anyone other than whatever agency or individual decided to do this. They're volunteers. They're not dogs that have extensive training most of the time. They're just dogs that are good dogs. Like, you know, your neighbor has a really good old lab and your kid loves to hang out with them. That's potentially a therapy dog. They don't need a lot of training. There are a few different organizations who certify them. Merlin's kids also, we train them and certify them, but they go through our service dog training. So they go through a massive amount of training as if they were going to be an emotional support dog, and their public access is going to be almost the same thing as our service dogs. So when you're looking, instead of looking for an easy way, like, oh, let me buy a fake ID or buy a fake vest online, you're hurting people with disabilities. It's as if you're tripping someone who's blind or hitting someone in a wheelchair. You are literally destroying what the Americans with Disabilities Act has tried to do, which is protect disabled people. And if you do have an emotional disability, if you do have PTSD, you don't need an emotional support dog. You are legitimately entitled to have a service dog. Why don't you train it the right way so that dog can go out and be the best dog in the world and can pass the same very stringent requirements that Merlin's kids puts on? So let me give you a little bit to do. I'm going to give you some information. I want you to go to Wyatt's List, Wyattslist.com. It's going to have so much information on how to properly teach your dog, on health, nutrition. We have a pet loss and bereavement line. We have all kinds of services. It's amazing. It's free, and then there's also a paid version, but it is amazing. Wyattslist.com. That's the first thing. And go on there and start learning. We will have all these webinars on how to train your own dog, and we'll be doing service dog, therapy dog, and also emotional support dog training on that. Also babies and toddlers and other things for expectant parents, because that's a really scary thing when you first have a new baby. And then the second site I want you to check out is merlinskids.org, merlinskids.org. Donate, help us to be able to provide more service dogs, and most of ours are rescues, to kids and to adults, but mostly kids with special needs, and to veterans in need who have PTSD and mobility and other issues. The third website, if you need behavioral help for your dog, is United, the letter K, the number 9, Pros, P-R-O-S, so UnitedK9Pros.com. which is our website for behavioral counseling. It's behavioral help. We are cognitive behaviorists who actually know how to fix these things and how to make your dog the best dog in the world. So instead of being one of those bad people that we all look down and starting to scam people, do it the right way. You'll feel good about it, and your dog is going to be the best dog in the world. Remember, having that fake vest, when your dog is out of control, it's still going to be embarrassing to you, and you're still liable for whatever damage that dog costs and causes. So do it the right way. So UnitedK9Pros.com. The phone number for any of those is 855-449-9288. info@UnitedK9Pros.com or United, the letter K, the number 9, Pros@gmail.com, which is interactive with our Gmail account. And I look forward to seeing everybody next week. Have a great, healthy, and happy week and weekend, and take good care of your dog.